This is the State Capitol Report here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you along on this Monday, April the 23rd, coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock. And we have a lot of news to cover in this first half hour of the program with our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, who joins us every week at this time to review the top state government stories from the past week and to preview what's on tap in the week to come. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
Let's talk a little bit about some things that happened last week, reviewing some of the updates and a couple of scandals. Did we learn anything from the testimony from U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez when he testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Thursday and had to answer questions from Senators Herb Kohl and Russ Feingold about the dismissal of those U.S. attorneys?
I think you could look at it this way. I mean, I think Gonzalez was on the stand for, what, 5-6 hours, something like that. I mean, it was an all-day hearing. Really took a beating from senators from both parties. And I think maybe a total of 15 minutes was spent talking about the case involving Georgia Thompson and about U.S. Attorney Stephen Biskupic.
So did we learn anything about whether U.S. Attorney Steve Biskupic in Milwaukee was or wasn't on the chopping block or was or wasn't pressured into pursuing the case against Georgia Thompson?
We didn't learn one thing, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was really no information that came out of this hearing. It was a chance for Senators Feingold and Kohl to ask about it, to say you should get us some more information, as Senator Kohl did. I think Senator Feingold called for an investigation from the Department of Justice's own office that looks into these things, but no new information. You did hear Senator Feingold kind of did a good job of summing up what this case has been about. Of course, it involves Georgia Thompson, what we were saying, a former state employee. She's going to be a state employee again now, who was sent to prison for 4 months for allegedly rigging a state contract to favor one of the governor's political donors. And a federal appeals court tossed that out in pretty quick order after her oral arguments, which Feingold noted to Gonzalez. And Feingold also said that, you know, one of the appeals judges in that case criticized the lack of evidence in the Georgia Thompson case.
Can you understand why many citizens of my state, as they see this U.S. attorney scandal widen, are now questioning whether the U.S. attorney in Milwaukee could have possibly brought the Thompson case for political reasons?
Senator, I don't look at the facts here. Again, this was a career prosecutor. The charging decision was made in consultation with a then Democratic state attorney general and a Democratic local prosecutor. When you allege, or anyone alleges, I'm sorry, when anyone alleges, and in fact there may have been politics involved in this case, what does that say to that attorney general, to that local prosecutor, to the career investigators?
Well, let me interrupt you because time is so limited. I didn't ask you, and I'm not alleging that there were political considerations here. I'm asking, can't you see how this U.S. attorney scandal, a problem that has occurred throughout the Justice Department, leads to a situation where people wonder if there are political situations, considerations?
Senator, I can't speak to what may be in the minds of the people in your state. Again, I'm doing everything
I can. Yes, I can, and I can tell you this overall problem here has led to some, you know, very unfortunate thoughts about this situation that may or may not be justified.
And Sean, I know that the appeals court that let Georgia Thompson free, released her from prison after hearing before the, I think the oral arguments were even done in that particular case, did issue its formal reading or formal decision in writing last week.
Yeah, and this is something
else. Sorry, go ahead.
Sure, this is something else that we've kind of been waiting on for a while, and a lot of people. As one law professor I talked to said, a lot of people were kind of expecting this opinion to rake the U.S. Attorney's Office over the coals, and it didn't. You know, most accounts I heard or read called it more of a gentle decision, and one where it basically said, you know, it certainly questioned this case and left no doubt as to whether Georgia Thompson was innocent. I mean, it made it clear that, you know, there, she shouldn't have been put in this situation in the first place, but it did call into question whether this law should be used the way it did, and it said that it creates a situation where an attorney can bring a case in good faith, think they're doing the right thing, and a state employee can be acting in good faith, thinking they're doing the right thing, and they both end up at odds. So that's sort of where the decision ended up. And As far as what this does for other political corruption cases, I talked to University of Wisconsin law professor and former U.S. attorney Frank Turkheimer, and he said that, you know, the court was absolutely emphatic here that no crime had occurred in Georgia Thompson's case, but he said that wouldn't have any effect on other political misconduct cases.
You know, the Seventh Circuit is not, it doesn't favor corruption. I mean, it's not a pro-defendant circuit or a pro, you know, it doesn't take corruption lightly. It's just that it just isn't here. I mean, there was no, you know, no real gain by this woman other than a raise pursuant to statutory and regulatory procedures. And maybe her boss thinking she did a good job in saving the state some money. And I suspect the other kinds of corruption prosecutions that we have seen, we will continue to see in this case, will have zero impact on them.
Yeah. So what happens now?
I think the U.S. Senate and House committees that have been looking into these U.S. attorney dismissals have asked for more information from the Justice Department, from the Attorney General. And so we'll kind of wait and see as those documents come out. But, you know, right now that's where we're at, just a wait and see. At this point, there's no, you know, no further action happening on this right now.
We have a caller who wants to talk about the Georgia Thompson case, and I'll do that right after this weather break, just so we have enough time to address it. 1-800-642-1234 or 263-1890 are numbers if you would like to ask our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, a question about the Georgia Thompson case or any other news before the state capitol these days. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Wisconsin Public Radio State Government Reporter Sean Johnson. We're reviewing the top state political stories of the past week, and we will also preview what issues will be taken up this week at the State Capitol. After 7:30, by the way, we're going to be welcoming in the sponsor of a controversial bill dealing with video franchising. That's after 7:30, and then after 7:45, we're going to be welcoming in the Assembly Speaker, Mike Hipsch. And we are going to focus in with him about Republicans' health care reform proposals. But now, Sean Johnson telling us some of the latest news from the state capitol. And Stephen LaCrosse is our first caller on the state capitol report. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Sean. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask about the George Thompson case. It kind of appeared by the ruling that the judges were just disregarding the whole thing and saying this was kind of a political hit on this woman and the case had, like, very little merit whatsoever. But I'm confused in that Biskupic did bring charges against this woman. There was evidence that at one point she said this awarding it to anything other than Edelman, the big contributor, wouldn't fly politically. There seemed to be an appearance of some kind of politics entering in the bidding process, and he was able to get a unanimous verdict from a jury, and many of the juries, when they were interviewed, said there seemed to be plenty of evidence here.
How do the experts resolve that one, Sean?
This question about how Georgia Thompson mentioned that it wouldn't fly politically with her bosses was addressed pretty extensively in the opinion, not with the amount of, you know, flair that you heard in the oral arguments, but the judge who wrote the opinion kind of went through all the different possible scenarios of what that could have meant. And in each case, he just basically came to the conclusion that, you know, it wouldn't be a felony to do that type of thing. And the idea that you can't think about politics when awarding, you know, a state contract, I forget the wording he used, but he said that's silly. You should be able to consider all factors.
I thought there was also some talk that because she did say, apparently, that it wouldn't fly if Edelman didn't get the contract, that there was, that could have meant that we need to give this to an in-state company, not an out-of-state company, that politically it wouldn't fly if we gave this lucrative contract to an out-of-state company.
Right, which is a legitimate thing to be considering. And, mm-hmm. I mean, the court also noted that if it wouldn't fly politically with her bosses, there's no way to know exactly what her boss's rationale and whether that was the same rationale that Georgia Thompson used. It was just too hard to, pin her down on that one point.
Yeah.
As for why the jury, you know, saw her as guilty, and you know, a judge sentenced her to prison. From what I've heard, I think this, it sounds like this is kind of an iffy statute in the minds of some defense attorneys and other, you know, other lawyers kind of think that this is, this statute is written as such that it can, it's a little too vague and it can be applied to people to whom it shouldn't be, which is what the judges wrote in this case. It's meant to sort of close a loop, a loophole for people who might be, you know, willing to take advantage of a loophole for personal gain, but it ends up going after people it shouldn't.
Boy, we have so many other issues to cover that I'm afraid we probably shouldn't stay too much longer on this one. But again, Georgia Thompson in the news today because that she will be returning to work today. She's going to return to state government employment. She will be the assistant to the director of the Bureau of Risk Management. Apparently, she didn't want to be overseeing contracts and bidding anymore.
Yeah, well, who could blame her?
Yeah. Now, I will be talking with Phil Montgomery, a Republican state representative from Green Bay, co-author of the Video Competition Act. This comes up for a vote tomorrow?
It probably in both the Assembly and the Senate. This is something that, I mean, there was a little time between the public hearing on this and when the committees voted on it, but people seem to be on the same page about this. This is a bill that will let AT&T offer its television service statewide, but also it big thing it does is it takes away the situation right now where you have each municipality negotiating a cable franchise and puts that authority in the state to negotiate those things. So it would wipe out all these deals that all these communities have reached with these cable companies, and it's going to put that in the hands of the state.
Some of the issues that came up also in this last week, we saw a news conference with the supporters of the statewide smoking ban saying we're formally introducing this and it's going to be all workplaces, no exemptions for taverns. So that's what it's going to be?
Yeah, well, who knows what it's going to be? They said, you know, we're not going to budge on this. And then you also saw comments from the Tavern League saying, we're not going to budge on this either, and that taverns need to be exempted from this ban if you want to recognize the contribution we made to Wisconsin, to Wisconsin's economy. You got to keep us out of this. So both sides sort of digging in their heels at this point. When the governor announced that he wanted a smoking ban in his, I believe it was a State of the State address, he said he wanted a ban everywhere. He wanted to ban smoking in all bars, restaurants, everywhere. He since made comments where he said, you know, if I get 95% of what I want, I can't demand everything I want, sort of along those lines, sort of left it open to compromise. So who knows what's going to happen? You know, yeah. Stay tuned.
Do any next step scheduled in the smoking ban legislation or not yet?
I haven't heard anything yet.
The legislature, they actually passed a bill allowing us to drink beer samples in the grocery store. What's that all about?
Yeah, right now you can drink a couple wine samples at the beer or the liquor store under Wisconsin state law. And this basically applies that same law to beer. There's so many microbreweries now that you can, once this law gets signed, as you kind of presume it will, it'll let you go into the store and get a couple 3-ounce samples of beer. So the equivalent of a half can of beer for free.
Is that it? So there actually was some sort of law in the books that said we grocery stores couldn't do this or only could do this with wine, and now we can now beer.
Yeah, I think the wine thing was added a few years, maybe 5 years back, and sponsors of this said there have been no problems. We should offer it to beer, too.
I guess I'm going to the wrong grocery stores. I haven't seen that. We have speaking of kind of hot-button issues here, Alan Bayfield has a question. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I've been out of the state for a week, so I don't know if this has happened already, but I'm wondering if the incident at Virginia Tech is going to encourage the gun folks in the state to come back with the concealed carry law again. I'll take my answer off the phone.
Yeah. Any idea there, Sean?
I kind of wondering the same thing. I think whenever you see an event like this, it's only a matter of time before both sides of the gun debate chime in and say, if you'd followed what we believe in, you know, maybe things like this could be prevented. And I haven't heard that yet in Wisconsin. But you very well could hear someone say that concealed carry can prevent these types of things, although Virginia is a concealed carry state. And likewise, you could very well hear people say this is, you know, evidence for we need more gun control. For example, this gun was purchased over the internet from a Wisconsin store. Who knows if you'll see some call for, you know, cracking down on things like that.
Right. I know after that, the Weston school shooting, there was a call to let principals or teachers have guns in schools, and that was shut down, excuse the pun, rather quickly.
Yeah, weren't even in session at that point, but you just know from a proposal like that, and I'm sure the sponsor knew as well, that's not the type of thing that's going to go anywhere.
Well, thank you very much, Al, for the call. Just a few minutes left here to kind of look ahead or review. The senior care issue was back in the news last week. Didn't you say the governor was twisting some arms at the federal level again on that one?
He talked to Secretary Mike Leavitt of the Department of Health and Human Services about extending the program and basically said that the state needs 6 more months to do it. Because, you know, there's no way that Wisconsin get a program to replace senior care before that time. And the governor also talked to Secretary Leavitt about what would take senior care's place.
Wherever we're going, it's going to take some real time to get there because we're going to have to work with each one of those 100,000-plus people to make sure that they have the kind of coverage and that they move seamlessly to a plan so that there's no interruption in their prescription drug coverage. And we need 6 months to do that. I mean, once they told us they were killing senior care, there's no way from that date until June 30th that you could ever get that done.
So 6 more months of senior care?
The governor said he was optimistic when he talked to Secretary Leavitt that the state would get 6 more months to extend senior care. But you got to imagine if it does get that would definitely be the end of the road for this program because the federal government's made it clear that senior care can't continue.
Yeah. Also, some action in the legislature last week on school class sizes or education funding?
Yeah, well, yeah. There was the SAGE program. Mm-hmm. It just seems to become more and more contentious between the two parties. And basically, Democrats denied an audit on the program, saying that they were, you know, worried Republicans were going to use the audit against them. Republicans call it, you know, an unprecedented step and an effort to just get more information on this program.
Yeah. And
also last week there was a call for a change to the school funding formula. You had the Florence School Board President Dan Brereton was one among those who spoke, and he said that his school's finances are in such bad shape it's created a situation where the district has to be cautious at every step.
Every decision we have to make has to answer the question, how will this help pass a referendum? And I don't, you know, I'm not an educator, but that sure seems like a damn poor way to have to run a school.
Yeah, and less than 30 seconds, Sean, we might see some votes on the budget this week, too?
Yeah, I think that's maybe one of aside from the video franchising bill, the budget may be one of the big things that comes up this week. Lawmakers reached an agreement late last week to take some policy out of the budget, like the QEO for teacher salaries.
We'll talk to Mike Kipsch about that when we talk to
him
in a bit. Thanks a lot, Sean.
Thanks, Joy.
This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Monday, April the 23rd at 7:36. This is our State Capitol Report, and in this segment of the program, we're going to talk about the Video Competition Act. It is expected to get a vote tomorrow in the State Assembly. It's a bill that would allow phone companies like AT&T to get involved in the cable TV business. We will talk with a co-sponsor of the bill, and we will welcome your questions about this at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. We only have about 10 minutes with our guests, so if you have a question, whether you better get it in soon at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Just 10 minutes or so with Phil Montgomery, Republican State Representative from Green Bay and co-author of the Video Competition Act. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for being with us.
Sure.
So what in less than you know, an hour, what is the Video Competition Act? What is this going to change?
Well, the two biggest things that I say that are beneficial for this bill is, one is to bring competition to the video market. Anytime that you have competition, you're certainly going to see price declines, which in other states have been anywhere from 15% to 21%. And then you're going to see better service offerings, and the fact that you know, when people compete, they're going to offer various channels and a different variety of channels, and hopefully some will even compete by doing some a la carte menu programming, whereas you get to choose which menus and programs that you see.
Now, this is a little bit confusing, but the way I understand it, in very simple terms, mm-hmm. this would a phone company like AT&T could negotiate a contract with the state rather than individual communities for providing this service?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you start off with AT&T. What's the bill is designed to do is to allow any competitor, whether you're a phone company, whether you're an individual company, wherever you are located in the state, to come in and, again, negotiate one statewide contract instead of having to go around and negotiate upwards of 1,800.
Yeah, and the reason I brought up AT&T is that it is receiving most of the attention because it's behind advertisements lobbying for this particular bill.
Yeah, as well as, again, others, and as again, as the most of the folks that I've heard from are people back home that when I speak to them, either at the coffee shop or out and about, want competition.
Yeah. The statewide contract that a competitor could negotiate with the state under this bill has some local cable access companies or people, advocates, upset. What does this do to, you know, community access cable?
Well, excellent question. The fact is that right now, all communities are able to negotiate a 5% of the gross revenues of a cable company or a video provider for the use of the right-of-way. All new competitors will pay that full 5% under my bill as well. What we are looking at is an additional fee on top of that 5% to pay for the public, education, and government channels. Now, the one thing that I will say is this, is that right now we charge a 5% sales tax in this state. And I guess I have a problem going to a 7 or an 8% sales tax on video customers. The 5% funding is more than adequate for the funding also of the public access channels. Again, what's under debate is, you know, do we in fact take, you know, the video customers only? Because, again, satellite customers do not pay for public access channels. Over the air do not pay for public access channel. And those that choose to watch your video on the Internet do not pay for public access channels. So what you have to look at is are we going to have those that are video consumers subsidize those that do not? Now, again, do they get an added benefit of watching that? Yes, they do. But when those monies are used for purposes other than public access, then you are, in fact, subsidizing their property taxes of others.
We have a couple of callers I want to get in. Steve in Madison is first. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Thank you, Joy, and thank you for having this guest. Representative, I'm concerned about the loss of autonomy for the local municipalities that negotiate the contracts. And, you know, I see the ads that have been brainwashing people so they don't realize what they're going to lose, and the huge campaign donations that are coming from AT&T primarily. Not only are they paying for the ads, but they're filling your campaign coffers. Well, the citizens of Wisconsin stand to lose, and you wrap this all up in a nice little package called competition. We value our public access in Madison, And I hope you'll find some way to save it instead of talking about it raising property taxes and all these red herrings that you do. How can you take these campaign donations and look your constituents straight in the eye?
Thank you, Mike. That was great. I don't know if it was prepared or read, but again, the folks that I talk to see it as just that. It is competition. We have worked on this bill. I've worked on this bill in a very broad bipartisan fashion. It has 42 co-sponsors in both houses, as well as we've been working with the governor. Again, what you have to look at is the technology that the cable agreements were first come to, which were in the late 70s, and the only technology was very capital-intensive, and it required that cities give, in essence, a de facto monopoly to one provider. Right now, Madison only has one provider. Green Bay only has one provider. And so the agreements that are come to under that regimen are much different than what can be allowed under competition. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, so it means that cable, these local channels, cable access could go away because not only everybody would negotiate, including the current cable providers, would negotiate with the state?
That's a great question. In fact, our bill requires that you carry PEG channels. And in fact, if you do not have a PEG channel, our bill allows for municipalities under 50,000 to have two PEG channels. Currently, again, most communities use that 5% franchise fee to fund PEG channels. What is in, again, is people are asking for an additional amount on top of that 5% to, again, tax the users of the video service on a scale unseen anywhere else. Again, we're only charging a 5% sales tax on any other good or service, and yet folks are asking that we go to an 8% sales tax on video consumers. And again, here's the deal, is if you live in Madison and you are a video subscriber, and you pay not only the 5%, but then you're assessed an additional tax on top of that, you're then paying 7 or 8%. If that money is not being used for the delivery of public access and going straight to the city's general fund, then you, as a video customer, are subsidizing those that do choose not to take cable, okay? And that's where we have documentation and memos out that show that, again, they are not purely using these funds for public access.
Yeah. I'm going to try to get one more in. Alta in Eau Claire. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, I had a different question, but I'm going to say one thing that I understand, that every video company or cable company has to have their own lines. And I know what happened not too long ago with AT&T's telephone lines. They bumped up the cost to the cloud, which also serves this area, a lot cheaper than they charge. And I was forced to go to AT&T. Now, I have cable, but only the minimum, because all I want is the PEG stations and public access channels, and I can't get them unless I have cable.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, Alta. We're almost at our weather break time. Representative Montgomery, you want to respond to her as quickly as you can?
Again, what's been shown under this bill is, and again, actual data is 27% more folks take the bundled package, and by doing that, we're pushing broadband out to more rural areas, which is something that is great for the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, do you expect this to pass the Assembly when it takes it up tomorrow?
I do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Phil Montgomery, Republican State Representative from Green Bay, co-author of the Video Competition Act. We're going to be welcoming in the Assembly Speaker, Mike Hipsch, in just a moment. We'll talk with him about some health care reform proposals that Republicans are pushing called Patients First. Plus, we'll talk to him about some other issues in the news. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890 if you'd like to talk to the Assembly Speaker. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 11 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8, I'll welcome in the author of The Cigarette Century, which talks about the role and history of the cigarette in our culture. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. Right now, we are examining the news of the week when it comes to state government. This is our state capital report. We are going to be welcoming in the Assembly Speaker, a Republican from West Salem, Mike Hipsch, part of a group representing the Republicans' health care reform agenda called Patients First. We have on this program talked to Democrats about their health care reform proposals. And just a few weeks ago on the State Capitol Report, we heard from another Democratic state representative who was introducing a bill to provide single-payer health care in Wisconsin. We thought it only fair that we talk about what the Republicans think ought to be done in terms of health care reform in this state. And we'll talk with Mike Hipsch about that and whatever questions you have for him, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Mike Hipsch is the Assembly Speaker, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
As mentioned, we've talked a lot about health care reform from a Democratic perspective on this program, so I wanted to be fair and balanced and find out what the Republicans would like to see happen. And there was a news conference last week where you outlined the Patients First agenda. What's that?
Correct. Yeah, and it's really exactly what it says. We are going to put patients first. And what we consistently see in so many of the healthcare proposals that are being floated is that there's a greater and greater role of government. And if you really take a look at what the cost drivers are and talk to the providers out there, one of the biggest things that's affecting healthcare and why we see healthcare going up substantially, maybe to 8, 10, 12% every year, is that government continues to say that it will provide so many different services through either Badger Care or Medicaid or all those different programs, and then pay pennies on the dollar to the provider for what it actually costs. It's you know, that third-party payer system. What we're saying is, as we get individuals, we get patients involved first, and we have a reason to improve our health, our own lifestyle, keep track of our wellness, and then also have greater control over the purchasing power that we have, you know, through the free market. That will then reform healthcare. That will give us the opportunity to have a greater say as to what's being purchased, how much it costs, and give us the flexibility as patients to go from one facility to the next, determine what's the best price, best quality, and that, of course, will affect the marketplace just as we've seen in every other way that we purchase products and services here in the United States.
All right, on the agenda or on this reform package, health savings accounts. What do you want to do there?
Sure. Well, health savings accounts is one aspect of it. What we want to do is we want to combine wellness programs and other programs that give us greater information of the products we're purchasing. But through health savings accounts, you give individuals the opportunity to have control over their health care dollar. Right now, we go in and we purchase, we get our health care service, and we have our insurance company pay it, or our government pays it, or somebody else pays it. And there's really very little incentive for us to determine just exactly what it costs and determine whether or not we can get it at a better price somewhere else, or whether or not, you know, any of those free market forces that we understand in every other aspect of life are available. As I said last week during our press conference, I said, as American consumers, we now have greater information and greater purchase power over the purchase of a flat-screen TV than over our annual physical. I mean, that simply can't continue. We must give patients the opportunity to have greater control and greater knowledge over what they're purchasing, and that will reform the system. So that's what health savings accounts are designed to do. They're working very well in the private sector in many parts of the state, and certainly now we've seen, you know, my Democratic colleague, Bob Ziegelbauer in Manitowoc County, implement them in that county government. And what we're going to do is we're going to give tax deductibility to people who use them in their workplace and who get access to them. And then also extend this to state employees, give state employees the opportunity to enter into health savings accounts. And again, have greater control over their health care purchasing power.
Right now there is a state tax on the contributions to these accounts?
That's correct. As a matter of fact, Wisconsin is one of only, I think, two or three states left in the country that still tax these. And in fact, we are the only state in the country where the governor has vetoed that tax deductibility.
It sounded like the governor might be open to negotiation on this one this year.
That's what he keeps saying, and I'm looking forward to that. We have talked about our health care plans together a couple of times, and I think there is opportunity for him to, and he and I, to get to some middle ground where we can provide some serious reform to health care and give, again, patients the opportunity to have greater control over their dollars.
Now, this sounds like it's something the governor also advocates. You have on here health insurance premium deductibility. You want to be able to do that, too.
Absolutely. And this is something where, we did this many years ago, especially we started with, I think, in 1997 with the long-term care deductibility, and then extended it to health insurance premiums, and now the governor wants to extend it to all health insurance premiums, and we, of course, have supported that, and I think that's going to see some strong bipartisan support so that, again, as we purchase health care, we will have the ability to try and lower our costs and deduct that from our taxes.
You want to also encourage businesses to offer fitness programs by giving them tax breaks?
Right. Well, what these are called is workplace wellness credits, and we've seen that work in many states around the country, and one that is an opportunity here. Again, as individuals, as consumers, get the opportunity to have more information of what exactly they're purchasing in healthcare, and then the dollars, the actual control of the dollars to make those purchases, we believe that there will be a great incentive by people, and we've already seen this, where they will want to improve their own lifestyle. They'll want to become healthier. They will know that the decisions they're making are directly affecting their pocketbook and their health. And so that will give employers opportunity to provide more of these wellness programs, get into prevention, and make sure that the prevention aspect of this is something that is not a disincentive. We're not going to be taxing or requiring spending for that. We will give individuals and companies the opportunity to get credits for workplace wellness and prevention programs.
Yeah, and finally, what sorts of health care transparency reforms are you looking for?
Well, this is, of course, I think one of the most important things. And one of the things that, as I said earlier, we know more about flat-screen TVs than our annual physical. If we don't have the information to make wise purchasing decisions, then we're not truly American consumers. And that's when we see the need for the information of what exactly goes into a procedure, how much does it cost, what can the provider provide us, as far as the information, so that we can be wise purchasers. We can go from one provider to the next. We can determine whether or not this is good quality. We can determine the cost and who is, the track record of the individuals providing it. When we get that information, that makes us strong, wise consumers. And that's what, fortunately, what we've seen is, Secretary Leavitt from Washington has actually come out to Wisconsin and pointed to Wisconsin and a couple of providers in Wisconsin as leading the nation as far as providing that information to consumers. We have one over here in western Wisconsin. We've got others all across the nation and certainly across the state as to making sure that they know what's in the provision of the service, what costs, what how they compare from one facility to the next. And I think that's when we become strong consumers, and that's why you get into internet information technology. You get into greater provision of electronic data as our patient records, and that's when I think you get to a point where we can make the strong, informed consumer decisions.
One caller on this, Tim in Green Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I think that there should be a law for people who don't have health insurance to protect them from the system, from losing everything that they have, possibly just a 5% of their income. But there's got to be a law there to protect people who don't have health insurance.
What about people who don't have health insurance or can't afford health insurance, Mike Hipsch?
Well, obviously, we have programs like VadgerCare and Medicaid who provide for our most needy, and yet we can make reforms even in those programs. And while the government provides those dollars to make sure that you're going to get those services, we can still provide that to the low-income individual, that person on VadgerCare or Medicaid, and make sure that they have the ability to go to the facility they want. Again, injecting some of that free market consumer choice into the healthcare arena and give them the chance to move from one provider to the next and find out whether or not they're getting the best bang for the dollar. And again, giving them the control over their healthcare dollars, just like the rest of us. That, I think, is when we begin to inject that free market into the healthcare system, and I believe that will reform the system very quickly.
Yeah. In our final minute, want to give us a plug on what's on your agenda this week? Would you consider an important vote or something coming up this week?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got a couple of big items in the State Assembly. One is the legislative oversight of gaming and especially off-reservation casino siting, just giving the legislator and the duly elected representatives an opportunity to have a say in where those are going to go and where they should be. And then finally, the cable competition bill, where we believe that we are going to, again, inject some free market reforms into the delivery of cable. And, again, hopefully our laws will try to keep up with the ever-changing technology in that area. So we've got two, I think, big pieces of legislation that are coming up.
Well, we appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joy.
Mike Hipsch, Assembly Speaker, a Republican from West Salem. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the State Capitol Report here on the Ideas Network.